Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the Arcade, Canada's only video game radio show, here and exclusively on 92.9 Kick FM, Winnipeg's indie station. I am Mike the Legend. I am so glad to be back with you for our third straight new show in a row. It's amazing what spring has brought to us here on the Arcade. It's just fantastic because we are here joining you for Friday, May 22nd of the year 2009. So glad that you can join us, and we're so glad that we can join you on this fine evening. I say we using the plural words here because I am not alone in this wonderful venture that is the Arcade. Now am I?
Yes, I am Dennis, the newly recrowned Pallet Jack King, and I am also happy to be back here for the third week in a row.
Fantastic. I'm sorry, did you just say newly recrowned Pallet Jack King?
Well, yes. And no. But mostly yes.
Oh, with some no sprinkled in for extra flavor.
Not really. I just decided it was the most dramatic thing to say at the time.
Overly dramatic. That's just unnecessary. But how does it feel to have regained your mantle of Pallet Jack King? Reattained your status. sitting atop the throne of Pallet Jacks.
Well, it's more Duke of Forklift, I guess, these days. But
Archduke?
Archduke the third of Forklift? I don't know. Something along those lines.
Clearly you'll have to work that out.
Yes. But, it feels not bad. At least I'm not working on ridiculous school deadlines for a few months now.
Well, fair enough, and, enjoy it while you can. Enjoy the laid-back environment that comes with ruling over your kingdom with an iron pallet jack, obviously.
An iron fist-clenching a pallet jack.
Ooh, I like that. That's clever. That's good.
But the pallet jack's also made of iron, so as to avoid confusion.
Certainly.
Yes.
Really, everything in your kingdom of pallet jacks is made of iron, isn't it?
Yes, or steel. Mostly iron, though. Steel is it doesn't have that nice ominous touch that iron gets when it rusts a little bit. You know, I like being a menacing king.
You're a benevolent dictator, but you still like to maintain that edge, don't you?
Yes. Yes, I do.
A little bit of fear instilled in everybody around you is not a bad thing at all. Yes, we are back, and actually glad that you're back after you became a strolling minstrel for a weekend.
Yes, that a word of advice to anyone, don't do that!
Oh, do what? What are you advising against? Or perhaps you should also refresh our listeners as to what exactly we're talking about. In case they unfortunately missed last week, as I'm sure many of our listeners were, much like you, on the road.
Yes, well, it was a May long weekend, and it's very understandable if you were on the road. My band Putrescence was also on the road. We played two shows on Saturday and Sunday, but those shows were in Calgary and Edmonton.
Oh my.
Yeah, so to get to Calgary about evening time Saturday, we left at 3 in the morning Saturday to get there.
Oh lord.
Though we got there pretty early, and luckily one of the guys in the band's mom lives out there, so we hung out there for a bit, and but yeah, 3 in the morning. I got zero sleep that night.
Oh, Lord.
And you ever tried sleeping in a van or any vehicle?
I know some people can do it. I can't. I just am not able to.
I'm only able to do it when it's an involuntary thing. When you've gotten to that point where you just can't stay awake anymore and you realize, oh, God, I just fell asleep. You suddenly wake up from a sleep that you don't remember falling into. That's the only time I can do it. And guess what? That happened a whole lot this weekend to me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so
hopefully not when you were driving.
No, I didn't drive.
Oh, fair enough.
Yes, I'm able to, but the insurance dictated I wasn't able to. I guess it was, anyone present to sign for it was able to. I wasn't present to sign for it.
Well, you certainly lucked out then, didn't you?
I really did. No driving for me.
Well,
but I can't decide whether that, like, the drive there was worse or the drive home, because once we were finished playing in Edmonton, it was right back to Winnipeg.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. And that night, I felt bad not driving, so I stayed up with whoever was driving for a shift, which turned out to be a daunting task, since he drove for 9 hours straight. We made it from We made it from Edmonton to Yorkville, or Yorkton, sorry, in... I think we made it there by, like, 8 in the morning.
Good Lord.
Yeah, and we left at, like, midnight. So...
Huh.
Yeah.
All one shift.
Yeah, it was quite an impressive act.
That seems a little unnecessary, given that there are three other potential drivers.
Yes.
But I'm sure you didn't question it at all, and...
No, I didn't. No, I did not at all.
That's, that must have been a very tiring weekend.
Yes, it was.
I trust when you got back, you, crashed out on your bed for a good 36-hour stretch.
No, because, I had to work the next day.
Oh, Lord.
My first day back at the job. Woo! So that was a very interesting, fun weekend.
That's, oh, Lord. That's a very quick turnaround you had there.
Yes, so this coming up weekend will be my crash for 36 hours weekend.
Fair enough. And, it's one well-earned as well.
Yes, I believe so.
Oh, Lord, that's, So did you at least take the opportunity to, I guess, peruse through some reading material as you had ample time?
Yes, I did, actually. I read an entire book on the trip, which is hilarious since it's only 3 days. But when you're on the road, not driving, and you didn't bring any video games or anything,
because
you kind of packed in a hurry, well, what else are you going to do other than read the one book you brought?
Oh, only one book.
Yeah, but that book is a very good book. I would suggest it to anyone. It's The Sirens of Titan by Kurt Vonnegut, his 1959 tour de force of science fiction.
Interesting.
Which I think is a very clear influence on various other writings, such as Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, etc., etc.
Well, it's not often we get a book recommendation on a video game radio show.
No, and this is not the blast from the past. Make that very clear. We're only 7 minutes into the show. This is not the end of the show roundup.
No, this is not a Bizarro show week. No. Maybe one day in the future, but not this week.
Correct.
Interesting. But you didn't get a chance to look at any Sin City graphic novels.
No, even though you did threaten me on the air last week, I really... packed in a hurry and...
Oh, I think threaten is far too strong a term to be used. I merely,
persuaded?
Strongly encouraged it.
Yes, and I didn't.
You failed. Let's call a spade a spade.
What you gonna do?
That is a good question to ask. What am I gonna do? What am I gonna do?
Yes.
That's not a question I'm gonna answer on the air either. For fear that it might come back to haunt me.
Yes, of course.
Any punishments to be doled out will be made in quiet, off the air, away from any witnesses.
Oh, that was a little bit threatening.
No, just a statement of the facts. All the facts, nothing but the facts, just the facts.
Okay.
Just like Columbo.
But speaking of the facts, I think we have some facts to actually get to now. Since we've bantered on for almost twice our normal banter period.
Well, these things happen. Sometimes we have a lot to banter about, sometimes we have little, but as always, we have something we should always get to after the banter, the ludicrous leadoffs. And this week we have an interesting take on the ludicrous leadoffs, do we not?
Yes, we had... it was a little bit of weird news this week, and... we'll just call it a scheduling error, and... or something like that, and some news got shifted around, other last-minute news got brought forward. The Ludicrous Leadoffs will be split up between me and Mike the Legend.
This really has not happened in a good long while.
Yes.
And you will, of course, the listeners will be made to understand why that is when it comes to my turn, but have the floor.
Yes.
They will learn.
I don't really consider the first... story too much of a ludicrous lead-off, other than a great bit of top-of-the-show news.
It's an interesting little tidbit.
Yes, it'll work you into the true ludicrous lead-off, I believe.
And it's a great little tidbit for, nerds and geeks all around the world.
Yes, Kat Bailey of 1UP.com brings us this story, and it says, Robot Chicken fans will have good reason to check out Spore Galactic Adventures when it arrives next month. The expansion pack will feature downloadable content created by the writers and will tie in directly with the popular Adult Swim show. We're big fans of Spore, so teaming up on Spore Galactic Adventures was a natural fit and so much fun for all of the guys at Robot Chicken, said co-creator Seth Green. I'm quoting, "We're all gaming geeks, so when the Spore guys said they had an alluring proposition for us, how could we say no? Instead of creating absurd worlds with toys, this gave us the opportunity to create literally anything we wanted as gamers. Geek moment." End quote. One of the key features of Galactic Adventures is the character, or the adventure creator. The adventures created by the Robot Chicken team will be free to download at launch and will feature the usual array of exploding, I quote, exploding poo, angry yetis, and ruler-wielding librarians, end quote. We recently posted a preview of Galactic Adventures where we said, quote, "With the ability to string together separate acts to create a larger adventure, I imagine that there will be as many story-driven epics as there are missions that bring to mind the genitalia-driven days of the first creature creator." End quote. Galactic Adventures and its downloadable content will be available starting June 23rd. So that's something definitely to look forward to.
Fantastic. Of course, the Adventure Creator mode, something unique to Spore, and really the first time I can ever recall a game allowing the user to create their own adventure.
Yeah. The closest thing I can kind of think of would have been back in the old pre-Grand Theft Auto 3 game Driver, when you actually had the ability to actually film your ridiculous car chase scenes and then play them back in various angles. But it wasn't very well implemented back then. But that was the closest thing I can think of.
You know, we've seen level editors ever since the days of, you know, Excitebike on ye old NES days.
That's true.
And, you know, the great majority of games have some sort of editor to them, level editor, character editor, slash creator mode. But an adventure creator mode, this is fantastic, not only because, you know, you can make your own ridiculous adventure, send it to friends, post it for download, but the fact that, you know, it allows others who perhaps, you know, are creative sorts, such as the Robot Chicken writers.
Yes.
Who perhaps may not have an avenue into gaming, as, really, Robot Chicken is not really a license that readily lends itself to being a video game.
No, it really can't. I can't think of any possible way you could make a Robot Chicken video game, other than just being some kind of wacky WarioWare kind of game.
That's basically, I think, the only way it would work. But, you know, this they are very talented individuals over there, as if you have ever seen the program, you will quite easily understand.
Yes, I don't know too many people who are not a fan of Robot Chicken.
And if you aren't, perhaps you should put your prudish days behind you and get with the program.
Yeah, get with the program, Gramps. But,
I can only imagine the amount of exploding poo and phallic-shaped enemies that will be a part of their Robot Chicken downloadable adventures.
I just want to know how exactly this will work with voices. Will you be able to record your own voice? Will you have to like type in oodles and oodles of text, or will you be able to sync up various things, or will it be play through an adventure, or will it just be watch an adventure like a movie?
Certainly a good question to ask. I'm not entirely certain on this. I believe we'll simply have to wait the 4 weeks between now and then and see how it all plays out.
Yes.
If you were able to record your own dialogue, that would be ridiculous.
Yes, and I'm sure many of us would end up probably getting in trouble on the internet.
Oh, lordy, yes. So it'd be wise if that feature was not included.
Yes, since we all know what YouTheManNowDog.com or YTMND.com has kind of become, etc., etc. Plus, not to mention what the hell would happen if all those 4chan people would get on it.
Oh, lord. It would really, really just be the end of the internet as we know it.
Yes.
Well, we will only wait and see. Wait and see. But as we mentioned before that, we are splitting up this week's Ludicrous Lidoffs, and with a good reason.
Yeah, we kind of lulled you into a false sense of security. I think the real meat and potatoes of the show starts now.
Well, I'm inclined to agree with you. Now, if you've been listening to us at all over the last few weeks, not only, one, have you been amazed by the fact that we've been able to consistently produce new content on a regular and recurring basis. Don't worry, we are frightened by this fact as well. But two, you've heard us speak at great length, not just at length, great length.
Yes, great length.
About the demise of the studio behind Duke Nukem Forever and, you know, in turn, the demise of Duke Nukem Forever.
Yes.
The official demise.
Yes. You called the time of death last week.
This is true. This is true. As last week we spoke about the fact that, you know, members of the development team, artists, whatever, were starting to post artwork and stuff they had done to contribute to the game, were posting it on their own personal blogs and demo reels to try and, you know, get work elsewhere.
Yeah, since they're SOL in that regard.
They are mightily SOL. And, you know, even the company, 3D Realms, went so far as to post a picture of, you know, their employees waving goodbye with a goodbye message on their website.
Yes.
But now it appears, it does appear that some, I guess, magic, we'll call it, has taken place, and the dead have risen, in a manner of speaking. Now, this is a story that's been all across the internet over the last few days, as there's been a collective spit take on the part of those who...
who were drinking drinks while reading this story.
Which I'm sure is a great many people.
Yes.
If you are consuming a beverage, do put it down, as we don't want you spitting on perhaps somebody who is close to you and them getting mightily upset. We are looking out for your best interests.
Yes, or if you're driving in a car, we don't want anyone to crash.
No, 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 we always, you know...
So you might want to pull over to the side of the road
first. Always advocate safe driving here on this program. Well, the story comes to us from Kat Bailey of 1UP.com, but as I said, this is a story that is all across the interwebs, and she says, more than a week after the Duke Nukem Forever team said their final goodbyes, 3D Realms, the company, you know, behind the Duke Nukem Forever game, they remain alive and well, and they're taking on their former publishing partner in court. So, 2 weeks ago, we reported that 3D Realms was dead. They had closed their doors, closed up shop, bankrupt, business is over.
They are an ex-parrot.
Correct. Now, apparently, such is not the case. According to a recent release via Shack News, quote, despite rumors and statements to the contrary, 3D Realms has not closed and is not closing. 3D retains ownership of the Duke Nukem franchise. Due to lack of funding, however, we are saddened to confirm that we let the Duke Nukem Forever development team go back on May 6th while we regroup as a company. This quote or statement, press release goes on to say, quote, while 3D Realms is a much smaller studio now, we will continue to operate as a company and continue to license and co-create games based upon the Duke Nukem franchise, end quote. So it turns out that 3D Realms, the company, didn't close their doors. They simply let go of, you know, the people behind the one game they were working on. But there's more. The story goes on and says that the company 3D Realms also had a few choice words for Take-Two Interactive, their publishing partner for Duke Nukem Forever. Quote, Take-Two never paid 3D Realms any advances or signing bonuses or any other funds related to Duke Nukem Forever up until July of 2008, at which time they paid $2.5 million in connection with another agreement for an unannounced game, a spokesperson said. Quote, this is the sum total Take-Two has paid 3D Realms in connection with Duke Nukem Forever, end quote. Now, last Friday, actually, Take-Two filed a lawsuit against 3D Realms, claiming that it was owed, quote, millions of dollars for Duke Nukem Forever. 3D Realms, however, has a different take on the situation, as you can well imagine. They say, quote, Take-Two retains publishing rights for the Duke Nukem Forever game, although 3D Realms retains certain rights to sell the game directly to the public. Late last year, 3D Realms began negotiations with Take-Two Interactive to provide funding to complete the Duke Nukem Forever game, is what was said in their statement. The statement goes on to say 3D Realms informed Take-Two that it could not financially afford the changes Take-Two was suggesting and would be forced to release the team if agreement was not reached. End quote. Take-Two apparently made a, quote, last-minute proposal to buy out the team and the Duke Nukem franchise, but that the developers considered it unacceptable because it offered no upfront money, no guaranteed minimum payment, and no guarantee to complete the Duke Nukem Forever game. 3D Realms called the proposal a fire sale, end quote. So apparently, this is, you know, there's a whole lot more going on behind the scenes than what we ever thought.
Yes.
Which, Who knew?
Take-Two saying they were owed millions of dollars. 3D Realm saying they were only ever paid $2.5 million. For what, a game that cost $20 million to develop so far?
Apparently, in other court documents, it's the price of, you know, the Duke Nukem Forever game has been pegged at $20 million, if not more. So let's recap. Apparently, 3D Realms as a company, still up and running. Duke Nukem Forever team and everybody who worked on it for the last 12 years, you know, if they were still there, gone and let go. Why? Some dispute over money between 3D Realms and their publishing partner, Take-Two Interactive.
I see. Well, on the one hand, if I was an employer and I had employers working for me, who were working on something that I very much wanted completed, and they just never completed it, I would fire them.
Certainly.
But I would actually not, you know, dilly-dally about. I would actually just fire them. I would make a statement saying, this incompetent team who has been working on this game for 14 years has cost me so much money I've considered going bankrupt as a result. As a result, I am firing them, and the project is now up in limbo, as you can very well understand. That would have been a more noble thing to do, I think.
Certainly.
Because that's very much what it seems like they're doing here. But, on the other hand, there's the whole Take-Two element where they want the game regardless, and they were willing to buy out the
entire franchise.
Yeah.
Lock, stock, and barrel. I don't know what's going on here, and, you know, this really just, you know, does more to garner hatred towards the management of 3D Realms.
Yes.
And those above them. You know, if it was a simple matter of they went back, you know, they couldn't operate anymore, they were out of funds because they worked on something too long and costs just got out of hand and there was no end in sight and they had to close up shop, well, you know, you can understand that and still mock them for their gross ineptness or ineptitude, which we did.
Yes.
And I'm sure many, many others did. And then, you know, you'd lament the fact that you never have a Duke Nukem Forever game. And it would be done. That was the end of it. No. Now we don't know where the hell this is going to go.
Unless this is all some kind of big ruse to completely stir up one big final bunch of interest in Duke Nukem Forever before actually releasing it.
I suppose that's one way of doing it. It's probably not the best or, you know, most advisable way of doing things.
But it's definitely not the most ethical way of doing it.
Oh, hell no.
Unless, of course, all these people are just in on the joke, and the Duke Nukem team is just kind of not actually fired at all, and they're all kind of in on it, and, you know, no one loses a job, blah, blah, blah.
Either way, this is simply, you know, a horrible situation if you're one of the, you know, development team members who was let go because there's, you know, posturing and money finagling going on between the two companies that own, you know, the rights to the game that you're working on. Terrible, terrible situation to be in.
Yes.
You know, on the one hand, you know, your company is still alive, there's the hope for work that you'll, you know, get a call back and maybe get to work on the game again and actually finish it. On the other hand, they canned you because they really didn't want to, you know, pay you anymore. And made it quite clear they never want to release this game.
Yes, but they still want to hold on to the Duke Nukem franchise because they want to make other games. Or something.
Yes, obviously. What other games they have, or what they might be working on, who knows?
Or what other development team do they have? Themselves? All the managers at 3D Realms are just going to crack their knuckles and pull out the old programming, you know, interfaces again and be like, I haven't done this since Duke Nukem 3D, dee-dee-dee-dee. Technology hasn't changed one bit.
So really, the new development team consists of the upper management and the cleaning crew. of the offices.
Yes.
Obviously. So I guess ultimately what this boils down to is that, one, 3D Realms isn't closed, which is a good thing. But two, they still got rid of, you know, their entire Duke Nukem development team, which is a bad thing. But three, there is still hope by the virtue of the fact that 3D Realms is still, operating in some capacity. Lord only knows what the hell they're open for. If they're still working on another game, who knows, or if they're just open to sell t-shirts to any passerby who happens to find their location. Fantastic. But it, you know, maintains a glimmer. The now slightest glimmer that Duke Nukem Forever might come out.
Oh, I don't know. Which, maybe. We'll see what happens with this.
We'll see. If this legal wrangling between the two, 3D Realms and Take-Two Interactive, continues, maybe somehow Duke Nukem Forever gets awarded to Take-Two Interactive, and then are guaranteed to see a Duke Nukem game.
Yes. ASAP.
Like, they would put it out.
Yes, they would.
And it would have to be the greatest thing ever. And I think they would readily acknowledge that and accept it and try to make the greatest Duke Nukem game ever.
Yeah. Well, they don't put out garbage, we'll just say that. But,
Or if anything, they'll just, make a, slimmed down version and, slip it in as an Easter egg in the next Grand Theft Auto game. Who knows?
Yes.
Who knows what sort of craziness they would get into? Lord only knows where that's going, but something that we do know is going to happen and going to come to fruition is E3 2009. We're but a few weeks away, 2 weeks away.
Yes.
Start of June is when it comes around, and so companies are wisely starting to trickle out some information about games that are going to be displayed at the E3 show floor, and wise to do it now before it gets lost in the mess and noise that is E3, because
yes.
E3 this year, returning back to its ridiculous form.
Indeed.
In a manner of speaking. Not going to be the bloated mess that was E3 of 06 with, 8-hour lines to try and get your hands on, the Wii and see what it's all about. Not quite like that, but a tempered version of that. But one of the companies that released details of a game that they're obviously going to be displaying on the E3 show floor is Activision. And I guess it's really no surprise that the music genre games are now annual.
Yes,
so
yes, they are.
So, of course, not surprisingly, that they announced officially Guitar Hero 5 with some interesting details about some new gameplay aspects to it, which we will get to in a moment. But the story from Dustin Quillen of 1UP.com saying that Activision let loose the first official details on Guitar Hero 5 late last week, offering answers to many of the questions that have been racing through fans' minds since the game was formally announced later in the previous week, saying, quote, "What can you expect from the Guitar Hero World Tour successor? Well, several innovations that should help streamline casual and social play, for starters. As was teased in the initial announcement, the new party play mode allows players to swap instruments and difficulties on the fly, even in the middle of a performance. You'll also be able to play Guitar Hero 5 with any combination of instruments through a song, be it four drum kits, two microphones, two guitars, or any other possible configuration of four players and four instruments. Perhaps most exciting is the fact that every song is now unlocked from the game's outset. No more churning through set lists to get the music you actually want to be able to play."
Well, that's a lot of interesting information.
That is some interesting new details, new ways of doing things. Story also says, quote, "Some of the more hardcore-focused additions to Guitar Hero 5 include the new Rock Fest, which features five distinct competitive multiplayer modes, both online and offline, a redesigned Guitar Hero Music Studio for creating custom tracks, in-game band moments that reward players for nailing certain sections of a song as a band, and special song challenges that require band members to complete a song with a unique rule set. Also, series devotees will be relieved to hear that any Guitar Hero World Tour downloadable content you've purchased will carry over and be completely playable in Guitar Hero 5. What's arguably most important in this genre is the soundtrack, however, and Guitar Hero 5 is set to feature master recordings from 85 different artists, including over 30 musicians that have never before appeared in a rhythm game. The press release offered the following glimpse at the game's setlist, with songs, the announced songs being Sympathy for the Devil by the Rolling Stones, All Along the Watchtower by Bob Dylan, Blue Orchid by the White Stripes, a live version of No One to Depend On by Santana, A Punk by Vampire Weekend, Running Down a Dream by Tom Petty, Sex on Fire by Kings of Leon, and Ring of Fire by Johnny Cash. Between Guitar Hero 5, Guitar Hero Smash Hits, Guitar Hero Van Halen, Band Hero, DJ Hero, and Lego Rock Band, and The Beatles Rock Band, the Plastic Rock Isle is certainly going to be crowded this holiday season.
Yes, it certainly will.
Probably the most crowded it has been ever since this genre of gaming was, come to fruition 5 years ago.
Yes, or ever since Casio keyboards first came out.
Nope. Those account for nothing, obviously. Yes, Guitar Hero 5, interesting, I think worthwhile tweaks to the gameplay. I'd say needed tweaks.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to see how the four of a single instrument thing would work. Like, what would happen if you're all playing drums? Are you going to have nothing but four drum tracks and no rest of the song? Like,
I'm assuming it will, the computer will fill in the rest, but I don't know. I guess it's good, if you want to have two singers and then a guitarist and a drummer, or, have two guitarists and two drummers, really just two of something and then figure out the rest.
Yes.
Four of it, one thing is just, totally, totally needless.
Yes, but then you finally get to play four people all at once, Smoke on the Water. I mean, just to, to recreate on a very tiny scale that whole record that they tried setting or did set a few years ago with those, 1,000 guitar players or something all in, that field playing Smoke on a Water?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
That, just the video's on YouTube. It's ridiculous. It's just all these different guys and girls of all different walks of life, different ages, all different types of guitars, playing Smoke on the Water.
I believe they actually set the Guinness World Record for that.
Yes.
I think they also simultaneously created the Guinness World Record for that.
Most guitars played at once by a group of people
while playing Smoke on the Water.
That's a very specific record.
I suppose really anything's possible for a Guinness World Record now, but yeah, being able to switch your difficulty mode and
even switching the instrument on the fly
in
the song. That's interesting.
I wonder if you actually have to pause the game and do that, or if there's some sort of just on screen quick menu to go through,
or a button you press on the instrument. I'm playing this one now. Beep.
Potentially.
Drum solo.
I wonder if you can be able to do that to other players. Because then that would certainly add a whole new party, combative party element to it. Just being a real jerk to your other friends that you're playing the game with. Say you've got a buddy who just started out on, guitar, and halfway through the song you decide to amp up his difficulty factor to extreme.
Yes.
I don't know. That's how my mind works, and I'm a jerk sometimes. I won't lie.
Well, be interesting to see where that goes.
But this also should be a certainly interesting set list. 85 different artists, 30 of whom have never appeared in a game before, and already, the first two tracks, Sympathy for the Devil, but more importantly, All Along the Watchtower by Bob Dylan.
I'm kind of surprised they don't use the Jimi Hendrix version, but that's the version everyone knows. So
this is true.
Music education again, I guess.
Music, certainly. And gives your game more street cred, I guess, if you've got Bob Dylan in there.
At least they don't have Bob Dylan's version of Knocking on Heaven's Door. That would be a task. We thought Freebird was hard, just because of how long it was. Holy crap.
You raise a good point.
But
we were talking there about E3. Of course, we're looking forward to E3 this year. The last two have been, disappointments.
Yeah, they haven't been very good. This year will definitely make up, I think, for the last 2 years.
And not just because of the event itself, but also what has, the news that has come out of these events have, over the last years, has been lackluster.
Yeah, I don't know if it's because of the format that maybe companies haven't seen the need to compete anymore?
Compete, or just, hold off and hold their own events, but
maybe it's the fact that it's kind of going back to the circus again, that they want to actually amp up the whole crazy news at E3 time.
Certainly, but in a curious bit of news, one of the major players that you and I had hoped to see and hear and learn more about at the upcoming E3 is saying, not so much.
Yeah, Tom Magrino of GameSpot.com brought us this very interesting story here. COO... Well, actually, I'll just read the other part of the story, since that was the tagline I accidentally copied, and I don't need to read that.
No, you don't.
OnLive set the industry a Twitter when it unveiled its on-demand game streaming service during this year's Game Developers Conference. By way of a PC and a Mac software application or a small TV plug-in device, OnLive promises to deliver new top-tier titles from publishers such as Electronic Arts, Ubisoft, and Take-Two directly to gamers. However, many questions remain as to whether or not OnLive will deliver its marketing disrupting potential. Unfortunately, answers to those questions won't be coming out of the 2009 E3. In a post on the company's official blog, OnLive Chief Operating Officer Mike McGarvey confirmed that his company would be skipping the E3 this year, and the process derided the retail economic model that has thus far defined the gaming industry. Due to a number of different factors, the currently available distribution methods for video games present extreme challenges for developers and publishers, wrote McGarvey. This isn't a new development by any means. For years, industry experts have been monitoring and predicting this outcome. The former Eidos CEO, went on to note that while development and distribution costs have skyrocketed in recent years, the retail price of games has remained relatively unchanged. The stagnant price point, he said, is further aggravated by piracy and game trade-ins, creating a situation in which it's incredibly difficult for publishers and developers to turn a profit on their products. This situation, McGarvey then quite naturally noted, is one that his company hopes to alleviate. And I quote again, "We will be delivering the same top video game titles exclusively through broadband internet in the same release window they are available in retail, but with significant economic convenience and feature benefits to both publishers and gamers," he continued. "And this is the main reason why OnLive won't have a booth at E3 this year. More than anything, E3 is a retail-oriented conference, both for retail platforms and retail publishers, and OnLive is neither. OnLive is currently undergoing closed beta testing with an open beta period planned for this summer. The service's full commercial launch is expected this winter. For more information on OnLive, check out GameSpot's extensive rundown of the service from this year's GDC." Which they had a video below, but you obviously can't see that on this radio show, so...
That is most accurate.
But, OnLive, not going to be E3.
No! You'd think that they would be a new entry into the video game market, and basically saying that we don't like the old way of doing things, we're just going to kind of do our own things.
Yeah, a very ballsy move, I'd have to say.
It is a very ballsy move, but I think there's an equal amount of pros and cons for them to take this approach.
Yes.
Now, on the one, on the one hand, E3 has many, many, many eyes, many attendees. It becomes the focus of the video game world for that week. So you can, there's a great amount of attention on this one point.
Yes.
But at the same time, there's many, many hundreds of, people trying to get out messages about their game, their system, this, that, and the other thing. So it becomes very, hard to stand out. Like, you have to be, ridiculously awesome in order to, garner the kind of attention that you want. The kind of, sustained attention that you want, rather.
That's true. And I think in many ways, there's no way OnLive could properly show what they're doing with E3. since it, like they said, it's entirely reliant on broadband connections. And, you know, there's about a billion different ways to doctor up how fast of, you know, a connection you're getting.
This is true.
Like, for all everyone knows, you still are plugged directly into a computer saying, oh, look at how fast this streaming video is. This is all streaming video. See, streaming video. Oh, okay. But the computer's right there. No, it's not. No, don't worry about that. That's a... It's like, okay.
It's a toaster.
We get it. You're trying to pull the wool over our eyes, but really...
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Well, you know, OnLive really brings forth a new way of doing things.
It's true.
So it makes sense for them to kind of go about, you know, getting their product out there and information about their product in a new and, I guess, to this point, unconventional manner by completely skipping over E3. I mean, many, you know, they're not the first company to not go to E3, but they're the first company to just decide, we don't like the way you do things there. We're just going to do it on our own.
Yeah. Really. Like, that's what it is.
This is I fully expect them to hold their own press conference later in the year, I guess, when that summer beta opens for testing, which will be intriguing to see how well that goes over.
I definitely wouldn't mind trying that out.
Oh, I'm sure there are many, many hundreds of thousands that would like to get their hands on that.
I have a crappy computer that can't play games. It would be interesting to see if I could play games on it. So, yes. Which is, I'm sure, what everyone else is thinking, but this is what I'm dying to know. What everyone else is dying to
know.
And
this is something you can't show at E3.
Yeah, I know. And in many ways, I understand, because they're not actually bringing you a gaming product.
No. It's really just a
new way of experiencing games, really, is what it seems like.
Yeah. that's pretty much it. It's essentially a portal to games that's, you know, you see at E3, but instead of playing them on your home television, bang, right there on your computer, desktop computer.
Or your home television.
Or your home television, yes, can't forget about that. Two convenient methods to get your hands on live, so we'll just have to wait even longer for more details and more information regarding on live as we anxiously and eagerly await.
Yes.
On live as we, I'm sure, are both very curious, along with many others out there, to see how well this does and if it can really deliver what it promises or what it claims to be able to deliver.
Yes.
As we hope it certainly can, but of course, if people like OnLive and believe it certainly can promise what it says it promises, then they will snap it up and purchase it in droves. And of course, that is the great thing about a video game democracy. You vote with your dollars.
Yes, that's exactly what you do.
And, of course, the election results are tallied each month by the NPD group.
Yes.
And we have some, I guess, the election results, the voting results for the month of April here. This is actually the first time we're reporting on the NPD results for this year so far, as really there's really not been anything of great note to speak about. Wii Fit will, continue to sell a whole boatload. Mario Kart was quite popular. New releases would come, sell a bunch, and then drop off. Wii and DS would completely outpace their competition. But the reason we're talking about the sales for April is that sales for April in the U.S., because these are the only results we get that are absolutely free.
Yes, free is better than actually paying for anything.
I can't agree with you any more than that. That is a very fine statement to make, but these sales figures noteworthy because of the decline in them.
Ooh.
Yes, sorry from Tor Thorsen of GameSpot.com, your friend and mine, says, as had been predicted, the U.S. games industry saw the second month of double-digit year-on-year shrinkage last month for the month of April, according to figures just released by the NPD Group. The research firm reported only $1.03 billion in April retail sales of non-PC hardware, software, and accessories, a decline of 17%, the same percentage decline as from March. So both March and April of this year saw 17% declines from March and April of last year. But while many pin the blame on the global economic crisis, analysts peg the decline on the gangbusters business done in April of 08. Echoing the statements of other industry conglomerates earlier in the week, NPD's Anita Fraser said that system-selling hits like Mario Kart Wii and Grand Theft Auto 4 skewed the year-over-year comparison, saying, quote, "While April sales might appear soft on the surface, it's important to remember that April is being compared against a month, April 08, that realized nearly 50% growth over that previous year from April 2007. This year's performance still represents the second-best performance for the industry in the month of April, besting April of 07, which is the previous second-place holder, by 26%. Given how strong the growth was in the industry last year, there are still some months ahead where year-over-year comparisons may be difficult, but may should be an easier comparison than the last few months have been." So, certainly, comparing apples to oranges when you're comparing April of this year in terms of sales to April of last year, yes. As there was a ridiculous amount of, you know, noteworthy titles that came out in that period of April, May, and June of last year.
Yeah.
Really, all those AAA titles that we were waiting for finally getting released, and certainly skewing sales. But that being said, of course, there was one real noteworthy release in, continued release, I guess, echo of a release, in April, and that was the DSi.
Yes.
How exactly would that fare? We'll get to that. We'll go through the top-selling hardware for the month of April here. Sixth on the list was the PlayStation Portable, which sold 116,000 units, down 50,000 from its previous sales total in March of this year. Fifth on the list, PlayStation 3, selling 127,000 units, down from 218,000 in March. Fourth on the list, the PlayStation 2, selling 172,000 units, up from by 60,000 units from its March 09 totals. Of course, third on the list, middle of the pack, where it's been for basically the last, you know, year and change, the Xbox 360, selling half as many units as it did in March of this year, selling 175,000 units. Second on the list is the Wii, much like the Xbox 360, selling just around half as many for March, but still selling well, 340,000 units moved. And of course, the Nintendo DS. Now, the sales figures for the DS comprise both DS Lite and DSi sales. So in total, the DS sold over 1 million units for the month.
Yes.
But now, that's just for, you know, all DSis. The actual breakdown, I believe...
You mean for all DSs?
Yes, all DSs. Sorry. Got a little ahead of myself there. But the actual total of sales for, you know, DSIs for the month of April, 825,000.
Holy.
DSIs were moved in the month of April.
So 80% of the DS sales were for DSIs.
Yes. Now, back in the fall of last year when the DSi was unveiled and announced, you and I just kind of raised an eyebrow and wondered if this thing would actually take off.
Well, it looks like it is.
If people were to actually pay $50 for an extra camera or two on their DSi, and people have spoken. We are in the minority.
Yeah, apparently.
Apparently, if you put a new coat of paint on something, make it look a little fancy, charge extra, people will pay.
Yes. Why get a toaster when you can get a toaster that also brews coffee?
Toaster Plus.
Yeah, I mean... Whatever, the mob has spoken.
Clearly the mob has spoken, and we are on the fringe. We are on the outside looking in again. But of course, with the hardware, you need software to play on that hardware. The top 10 games, selling games for the month of April. 10th on the list, The Godfather 2 on the PlayStation 3, selling 91,000 units. That's one of the lowest top 10 totals we've seen in a good long time.
Yes.
9th on the list, Guitar Hero Aerosmith.
Ooh, that's...
Selling 110,000 units. That's a title that hasn't been in the top 10 since its second month of release.
That's a weird blip.
Oh, there are some other weird blips on here. 7th on the list, the new Super Mario... Or, no, sorry, 8th on the list. I'm getting ahead of myself. 8th on the list, Mario Kart DS.
Okay.
112,000 units. 7th on the list, new Super Mario Brothers, selling 119,000 units. So I suppose as these 825,000 people were buying their DSIs, they looked around, wondered what games should they get.
Yeah.
And saw Mario titles right there and figured, hey, why not?
These are tried, tested, and true in the past. You know, might as well keep going with a good thing.
Mario Kart. I like Mario Kart. I'll take that. Or, you know, they'll ask the clerk, New Super Mario Brothers, what's that? Clark
it's
tells
the
them.
New Super Mario Brothers game.
Oh, sounds good. I'll get that.
Yeah, okay.
Sixth on the list, Resident Evil 5, selling on the Xbox 360, selling 122,000 units, down from its March total, which was 938,000 units, which was its first month of release. Fifth on the list, The Godfather 2 on the Xbox 360, with 155,000 units. Fourth on the list, of course, Wii Play with the Wii Remote, 170,000 units. Third on the list, Mario Kart with the Wii Wheel, 210,000 units. Second on the list, Pokemon Platinum.
Pokemon Platinum?
There's a Platinum version, and nobody told me.
Did it just come out?
Apparently came out in March, I believe.
Huh. Weird. Who knew? Not Diamond and Pearl.
It's Platinum.
It's Platinum.
But it's ultimately just kind of the same game, which is really kind of how I thought they do things. But, you know, whatever. Who am I? Apparently 433,000 people thought it was interesting enough to spend their hard-earned money, and really, who am I to argue with them?
So was that the Pokemon Yellow to the Pokemon Red and Blue of days gone by?
I believe so. I can only imagine, but number one selling title for the month of April, Wii Fit with the balance board, selling 471,000 units.
Well, that one's going to be in the top space for quite a while, I think.
So, as we've said before, and we'll say again, Wii Play, Mario Kart, and Wii Fit are forever going to be in the top 10 of sales.
Yes. Until Nintendo releases a new system and releases new peripherals for that new system that are similar to these peripherals, at which point those will be the new... forever be in the top 10 peripherals.
Correct. Very much correct. That is what it is, and that's what's up. If I'm able to borrow a phrase from the great
Kimbo Slice.
Kimbo Slice.
Yes.
I threw in the pause for extra gravitas.
Yes. Now, do you think that this down 70% is a blip, or will it actually is this starting the decline of the video game sales now? Because it was nothing but up for, 2 years.
Oh, well, it's been nothing... longer, actually.
Three and a half years.
I think if you take a look, it's been, a slow, steady increase in sales year on year.
Yeah.
In total revenue. And then over the last few years, it's just been...
just picked
insane.
Up ridiculously.
It's been insane sales figures. And I think it's... yeah, this year is going to be an off year simply because, one, there aren't the big titles. And two, there is kind of this decline in people wanting to part with their money.
Yes.
And ultimately, it'll just... what you're comparing it to is, a previous year that was the biggest... revenue-generating year ever for the video game industry.
Yes, but that was my question. My question was, is this going to be a steady thing now?
Well, you know what? I think it will only be as steady as up until the next big AAA release comes out.
Yeah, but after that, will AAA releases just be the blips in the downward slope now?
An interesting point. You know what? Over the last few years, nobody has, been able to predict where and how these sales figures will go. Ultimately, nobody could have predicted the astronomical growth that this industry has experienced.
But I think what is becoming obvious now is the fact that, it seems like the video game industry is finally starting to get hit by the recession.
And you know what? I think that's a fair assessment. I thought it would have come sooner, to be perfectly honest.
I was surprised that it didn't come when everything else kind of happened. And when it didn't come right then, I think it was kind of ridiculous that people were saying that the video game industry is recession-proof. But it was kind of an interesting thought that, people stay home, not want to spend money, do this and that, blah, blah, blah. Sit home and play video games. Fair enough.
And you know what? A you know, video game will be cheaper than taking your family to the movies twice.
It's true.
It provides more value for your dollar than going out.
Yeah.
But then you have to, you know, be stuck at home with your family. Which, you know, depending on your situation, may or may not be a good thing, a good and enjoyable thing, and you may skip over that game and opt to go out instead. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if the next few years are kind of on the downslope.
And, yeah.
If it picks up again to the record levels that we've seen over the last, you know, especially last year, you know, I think that's looking a little too far ahead.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, it's always good to keep an eye into the future, but you can only look so far.
Exactly. No one is Nostradamus.
Not even Nostradamus was Nostradamus.
Yes.
But we could, you know, hypothesize, theorize, espouse different theories about where this video game industry will go, whether it's an up, down, bell curve, diagonal curve, bar charts, bar graphs, pie charts. It's been a while since I've made a good pie chart. It's obviously something I'll have to get back onto.
But we should... something we can accurately gauge is how much time we have left in the show.
Yes, we accurately gauge it because we have a counter telling us. And it's telling us we are running low on time.
Yes, quite running low on time.
And we should probably and wisely get to the end of the week roundup where we always leave you, the listeners, with something to check out and try and go ahead with, you know, something in your brain like, hey, that's pretty cool. What should, you know, what is it that you have for them this week?
Well, normally in this spot, I think all the Blast from the Past is occupying this space. In past times, it's been video games, movies, television series.
Yes.
This time, we've had one album before, a musical album, but at least it was video game related. This time it's not, as per the request of Mr. Mike the Legend.
Well, you know what? I thought it was appropriate.
Yes,
don't ask me why I thought it was.
The very first Black Sabbath album, the self-titled Black Sabbath album from 1969.
So it's a certified blast from the past.
Yes. It's way back there. It's a classic.
I think classic is probably one of the best ways to describe it. You know, to try and listen to it now... it was a little bit out of context. If you were to try and put yourself in the time of when it came out, it would blow you away.
Yeah, like, this is the most evil music I've ever heard in my life.
Genuinely. I only, you know, came to listen to this album, you know, last week, after it was borrowed to me, and hence why I kind of requested it, as the blast from the past. But really, if you haven't heard it before...
Yes.
It's a strong recommendation.
Yourself.
Yes. Familiarize yourself with it. Really, you have no reason not to.
Don't let Guitar Hero be your only music history.
No. You have to experience it for yourself.
Us telling you what to listen to.
Obviously. We control your lives. It's okay. put on some headphones. Pop it in. Either, you know, if you can find the old vinyl of it, so much the better.
Yes.
But if not, if you can find a digital copy, then that works just as well.
Yes, it does.
And familiarize yourself with it, because you're doing yourself a favor. You really are. It is an overall fantastic album. Fantastic album. And we could go on and sing its praises for forever and ever, but we should probably try and sneak in the code of the week, which this week I'm talking about X-Men Origins Wolverine for both the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. I was going to talk about it last week. Plum ran out of time.
We sure did. We have a little bit of time this week, though.
But I'm going to talk about some Easter eggs that are hidden within the game. And one of the Easter eggs is a reference to the show Lost, if you're familiar with that television program at all. I am a great fan. If you are not, then really disregard this. What you do is, in the first level of the game, just after you crash the Jeep, you'll have to climb some rocks and fight off a wave of enemies. After you do this, look for a boarded-up doorway... And then you slice and dice your way through the boards, and then you follow a passage to a hidden area with a hatch that'll look quite familiar to fans of the Lost program, and that will unlock the found achievement within the game. Now, there's also an Easter egg for Portal fans. In the Sentinel factory, you'll have to lower your body temperature to avoid a heat sensor. Then you have to move the teleporter, and when you do, move it all the way to the far right. When you do this, it reveals a secret room through the wall. Go through the wall, and in there will be cake.
Okay.
Celebrate your triumph because you have just unlocked the, quote, the cake achievement, which is, you know, also a fine reference to Portal. So, Lost in Portal referenced with an X-Men Origins Wolverine on your Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 video game consoles. A nice little nod to, you know, fans, geeks, and nerds everywhere within there. You don't see nearly enough Easter eggs in gaming these days. It's a mighty shame.
It's true.
It's a crying shame, but another crying shame is the fact that we are now fully and completely out of time and are now on borrowed time. Haha, these things happen. But, of course, we are here every Friday night at 7 p.m. We air again Sundays at 6 p.m., and I don't think we mentioned it before, so we'll mention it now just before we go. You can always email us, thearcade@kick.fm. Email us, let us know what you think about 3D Realms not being dead and a small glimmer of hope for a new Duke Nukem game. Who knows? Crazier things have happened. But until next week, good night, everybody.
Good night.